legs of a ranger, the unsuspecting stranger had better know the truth of wrong from right.
Good morning and welcome to episode 138 of Effectively Wild, the daily podcast from Baseball Prospectus. I'm Sam Miller with Ben Lindbergh. We're joined today to talk about the Texas Rangers by Jason Cole of Lone Star Dugout, as well as the prospect team at Baseball Prospectus. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing?
We're great. Later on, we'll be, not we, but we, you know, the larger we, Pete Barrett, we'll be talking to Richard Durrett from ESPN Dallas. So, Jason, we were just talking before we hit record about John Daniels and his youth, but he's in his eighth year as the Rangers GM, and by now we should have a pretty good sense of what his signature style is. How would you describe him as a GM? What sort of sets him apart, or what will people remember him for?
Well, I think one thing, and you can include him as well as A.J. Preller in this, the guys, really all the guys that are at the top of the Rangers organization is they make a point, whether it be draft, signing free agents, trades, they go out and get the high-ceiling guys. That's you know, you look at Neftali Feliz, the guy they got at quote-unquote the back end of that famous or infamous, depending on your point of view, Mark Teixeira deal, and that's sort of been the calling card of what the Rangers do. There's a lot of, you look at what will likely be the bullpen this season. Joe Nathan has a plus fastball. A guy like Tanner Shepherds is 95 to 98. Then, you know, Feliz will probably be back and most likely in the bullpen mid to late season. Wilmer Font, a guy that can touch 100. They like the guys with the fastballs. They like their athletes and speed, and that obviously the way Ron Washington manages a game, it fits that. But I think that's been one of the biggest things, is they try and go out and they've been going after the high ceiling guys in all ways, you know, all methods that you can acquire a player. Sometimes in the draft it doesn't work out as well with a Jordan Akins type, for those that are more familiar with the Rangers system. But for me, that's been the big thing. And you know, Daniels' first year, you remember he came in and he got the talented players that had a year left before they hit free agency to try and get that kind of flash in the pan success. He brought in Adam Eaton, which of course turned out to be kind of a complete disaster of steal in the Adrian Gonzalez trade. But on top of that, he got Vicente Padilla. And since that year, which was, you know, Padilla was around, he was okay with the Rangers for a couple of years, but it was pretty much a failure. Since that year, it's been a total building effort to what has been the last few years. And now the Rangers they might be in for another transitional year a little bit. I still think they're going to compete, but certainly after losing Josh Hamilton, after losing Mike Napoli, losing out on pretty much all of their top free agent targets, you're going to have your Profars and Olds probably in there at some point this season. Maybe Martin Perez at the back end of the rotation. This might be a little bit of a transitional year where the Rangers try to build forward a little more with this, I don't want to call it a new core, but somewhat of a new core.
So it seems like this has been an offseason of restraint, sort of. Not that the Rangers haven't signed guys. They certainly have brought in new players. But as you mentioned, they did allow themselves to be outbid, I suppose, for Hamilton and Greinke and Napoli. And I guess we often talk about how to actually land a free agent. Often you have to overpay, at least if you look at it from a dollars per win perspective. The person who bids highest often sort of overpays, but also ends up with the player. Do you think that it's hard to criticize them for not spending the money on those contracts, because those contracts did sort of get criticized, at least the Hamilton one? But do you think that they've been, I guess, has there been too much restraint? Has it been to a fault that they've been financially responsible? Should they be more willing to kind of flex their financial might?
Well, I think that's a great question, and one that I've thought of, or I've pondered myself quite a bit, especially as they missed out on Greinke and Hamilton. It was, you know, I've been quick to say even when this happened earlier in the hot stove season, Rangers fans got frustrated right away, understandably so, and kept talking about how this had been just a disastrous offseason. This was going to kill the Rangers. And I don't think that's the case. However, when you look at what the Rangers are lacking right now, they're lacking a Zach Greinke, and they need that Josh Hamilton type bat because they have good hitters, but they don't. Well, you can probably put Adrian Beltre in that kind of elite hitter category or close to it. But Hamilton, he's a guy that really he carried the team at times last year when the Rangers were playing their best was when Hamilton was playing his best. So I think. But, you know, when you look at it on a case-by-case basis, which you kind of have to do, I think, that the Josh Hamilton deal, given the length and the dollars, I don't think it made a lot of sense for the Rangers because it's dangerous. Hamilton, if you're betting on him to be healthy for a full season from here on to the rest of his career, however long it lasts, I mean, that's a bet you're probably going to lose. Next season's free agent market is looking, you never really know for sure till you get there, but is looking to be a little deeper. With this, what the conclusion I came to for the most part was that the Rangers can use this as a transitional year. They'll probably still be competitive. Like I said, they'll still have a shot to win the AOS. The Angels are certainly the favorite on paper, but the Angels, you could argue, also were the favorite on paper last year. The Rangers still, though they didn't win the AOS, the A's jumped up and won it. But, you know, that there's the extra wild card spot, whatever. The Rangers will still be competitive, but I think it helps a little bit to use the this season to develop some of the younger guys a little bit, get those guys into your core, see if they're going to play a big role down the line. And then next season you can add on the free agent to fill in the missing piece or two. That's my two cents. I'm not sure there's a right answer, though. I think what happens to this team over the next couple of years is really going to tell the story on that. Does it turn out that they don't end up signing a Josh Johnson or you know, whoever's on the free agent market next year. They don't end up making that big trade for another top of the rotation pitcher that they need to go along with Darvish and, you know, who knows what happens with the Derek Holland and Harrison and those guys. I think the next couple of years is going to be what really answers that. And did they really need that Zach Greinke? Did they need that Josh Hamilton, even if they were going to overpay in money in years? Like I said, it's a great question and one that, I don't completely know how to answer with a lot of confidence, but I have some theories.
Mm-hmm. So what's the Rangers starting lineup in September?
Catcher, you're going to have AJ Pierzynski, and the Rangers certainly are not deep there. You've got Pierzynski and followed by Giovanni Soto, who I think will do fine as a backup. And then you have your long list of Eli Whiteside is now gone, but there's a lot more of his types behind him. At first base, and this is where it gets tricky because you have the Nelson Cruz situation looming over everybody's head going into spring training. If nothing happens there, then everything's fairly straightforward. If something does, things are going to get crazy fast because the Rangers do not have really a backup right fielder right now. As it stands right now, though, with Cruz playing, Pierzynski at catcher, you're going to have Mitch Moreland at first base, Ian Kinsler at second, Elvis Andrus at shortstop. Obviously, Adrian Beltre will be over there at third. So that's the infield is pretty well settled right now. The Rangers are going to be looking for a utility infielder in spring training. They might do as many teams do. They kind of go searching for utility infielders on the waiver wire during spring training, see what they can get as guys are cut. Jurickson Profar is obviously the hot name there. I don't think that the Rangers will start the year with him on the big league bench. There's really no need for that. The Rangers, I think Ron Washington will look to use his bench and rest his stars a little more this season than he did last year. It really hurt him last year playing guys, top guys so often, giving them so few days off. So I think the utility infield role will get a little more play than it did in the last couple of years where, like Andres Blanco, I think, played in like 35 games and was on the big league team really the entire year. Probably not Profar coming out of camp. You look in the outfield, you're going to have David Murphy almost certainly in left field. He's been more of a platoon guy, not a straight platoon guy, but he's not been a full-time starter really since he's gotten to the majors. So this will be his chance. Coming off a career year, this is his chance to prove that last year was the real deal, and he's going to be headed into free agency soon, so it's a big year for him. Center field, first right field, Nelson Cruz, assuming he does not get suspended, that's set in stone. DH, you're going to have Lance Berkman. But in center field, that's probably the top position battle going into camp. You're going to have Leonis Martin out there, the Cuban import that the Rangers gave 5-year, $15.5 million deal to a couple years ago, has not gotten a full-time shot in the big leagues yet. And there's the fan favorite Craig Gentry, who has been the fourth, fifth outfielder the last couple years, performed quite well for the spot that he was in last year. Excellent defender. So that's the lineup. It's certainly not a bad lineup from position to position, but it's not quite as impactful as it was last year when you had Mike Napoli behind the plate and you had Josh Hamilton manning center and left field. But if Cruz does end up getting suspended, and who knows what's going to happen with that, the Rangers are going to have to kind of mix and match. You're going to have to put a little bit of Mitch Moreland in right field and maybe have Berkman play some first base. You could call Mike Old up and have him play some first base in right field. Lance Berkman, even though I'm not sure the knees work too well anymore, played right field 2 years ago. That could be an absolute emergency option. It wouldn't be pretty, but he can stand out there. So, it's going to be interesting to see the way those couple position battles shake out in camp. And if something happens with Cruz, like I said, it could be chaotic. There's even been a little bit of rumor out there that if something happened, maybe Profar would take some fly balls and get some work in the outfield, although I'm just not 100% sure that would actually happen.
But if you jump ahead to September, what do you think is your gut about what Profar is doing in September, what Olt is doing in September?
Well, there's always the chance that Olt's playing another team, really at any time. When you have Adrian Beltre at third base, who offensively, he's shown no signs at all of slowing down defensively. It's really impressive. Most guys at his age have at least started to lose a step or two. He is not. And Adrian Beltre just seems to get better with age offensively. It's ridiculous. So Olt's obviously blocked there for the foreseeable future. Beltre's going to lose a step or two probably the next couple years, and the bat's not going to keep getting better. Certainly. So, Olt will have his chance there at some point, but it's going to be a couple years most likely. So do you really want to take that guy and put him at first base or right field for now? Or do you want to try and get the most value out of him? The Rangers have certainly been open to trading him for the right deal. That right deal hasn't come along yet. So I think both, assuming they're still in the organization, are in the majors in September. If nobody's injured, neither one of them is starting though. Unless you decide mid-season, hey, we don't care, Ian Kinsler, you're going to move to first base, and this is going to happen, you're going to play second. That was the interesting thing to me about the Kinsler to first base situation getting nixed, was that now there's really no clear path to bring Profar up full-time this year. It would take somebody getting injured, whether it be Kinsler or Andrus, to really slot Profar in there and have him be comfortable right away. But I do think, by September, you've got both on the big league bench at the very least. I think at that point you're not putting out your best team. Not that I think Profar and Olt are going to be standout big time guys right away. I think both will have their share of struggles before they hit their stride. But those are two guys that if the Rangers are in the playoff race and if they're in the playoffs, those are two pretty nice bats to have off the bench, like I said, if everybody's healthy.
And where is Martin Perez at that point, do you think?
Man, it's anybody's guess with him from start to start, from inning to inning, from pitch to pitch. Mm-hmm. I still have him down as the favorite to win the number five job in camp. Given the bullpen is really thin going into camp, Soria is going to be out for at least the first month. He's still recovering from his second Tommy John surgery. Nathan was very good last year, faltered towards the end, seemed like he fatigued, but he's going to be okay. Or you assume he'll be okay, at least for most of the year. After that, there's Josh Lindblom and Jason Fraser. But outside of those guys, there's no experience in the bullpen. And you've got Robbie Ross competing for that number five spot. For me, Ross, you've got to leave him in the bullpen. He's pretty much a one-pitch guy last year. He's got the fastball that cuts, and he's got a slider that's kind of like a slightly slower and bigger cutter. I don't see Ross. I think he could have success kind of as a flash in the pan type as a starter, but I think he's at his best where he was at last year in that not lefty specialist role, but kind of short relief. He could give you three innings here and there, that type of role. So that's why I would go with Martin Perez. I think the Rangers want him to step up and grab it. He showed me, and I talked to the Rangers minor league pitching coordinator Danny Clark about this last year. I said, were you surprised that even though Perez's numbers aren't great, are you surprised at how he's kind of reacted to situations in the big leagues? Because he had a tendency in the minors when he could sit down 12 in a row, and then there's a four pitch walk, and then it unravels. And that's sort of the immaturity that you see in a lot of young pitchers, but it was especially happening in Perez in AAA. And Perez got to the majors, and he faced, I remember there was a game against Minnesota where there were two or three errors behind him. And I'm watching it going, okay, this is about to get really ugly right here. And he really bared down. He started commanding the fastball, and he got out of it. And that was one thing that Danny Clark said. He agreed. He said the Rangers had been very happy with how Perez was showing some toughness. There's a lot to improve on. The command is nowhere close to being ideal yet. I don't want to say nowhere close, because it's not like he has no idea where it's going. But he still falls behind a little too much. He did make strides last year, and I think he's going to win that number five job. But, you know, Justin Grimm will also be in the mix. The Rangers have said Cody Buchel and a couple others. Kyle McClellan, who's coming off of a pretty major shoulder injury. So who knows what they show. But I would say Martin Perez at least starts the season in the rotation. But, you know, who knows what happens as the year goes along. You're going to have Colby Lewis. Who knows which direction that goes. So it's going to be an interesting year.
And if you sort the Pecota, the pitcher part of the Pecota spreadsheet by wins above replacement player, I think it goes Justin Verlander 1, Yu Darvish 2. Do you see that sort of season out of him? Do you think it's going to be the Darvish we saw down the stretch from the start?
You know, I wrote this in the BP annual. I was actually really excited to write the Darvish player card, because this, you know, is... I watched Darvish from the start of spring training last year. I tried to catch every single one of his starts, because he's a fascinating guy. Just everything about him as a pitcher is completely fascinating to me, from the outstanding stuff to the kind of wonky mechanics. And one thing that worried me a little bit early last year was he seemed to be kind of a tweaker, in that he would tweak his mechanics from start to start. Like, he just, you know, pitching from the windup in spring training, all of a sudden, after I think his first start, in the big leagues, all right, I'm going only from the stretch now. Maybe, I think it was later in the season that maybe. But one thing that became evident as he went through the year was that he had fantastic aptitude. And that's one thing that I think is very underrated on young developing pitchers. And you can throw Darvish in there, because he's learning how to pitch in the American game. There was a lot of adjusting going on last year. Basically, the short answer is yes, I do think that's very possible, because of that aptitude. I mean, what Darvish did last year was he took kind of that hitch out of his delivery that he had, and everything was much more smooth after that. The other thing that he did was he really liked that slider, which is probably his best pitch. He liked that slider early in the year, but he couldn't throw it for a strike consistently. So he took the slider out for the most part. The same thing with the two-seam, the sinking fastball that was filthy, but he couldn't locate it consistently. So he kind of put those on the back burner, and he started really attacking with his four-seam fastball, his cutter, and that big, slow curveball, while mixing in the occasional harder curveball. And doing all of that, you know, limiting it to maybe not his best pitches, but the stuff that he can command best and fixing the delivery, it seemed to really click for him. All of a sudden, the command was there. He showed last year. There was a start earlier against the Yankees when he rose up to the occasion. He's a big game pitcher. He's a guy that really rises up, and I would not be shocked if he's the Rangers, you know, a true ace going forward. Maybe not quite this year, but I do think he'll be on the whole better. I think the walk rate will go down. But of course, like I said, maybe he is a guy that if one thing goes wrong, he wants to tweak everything again. But you know, it seemed like he had found something to stick with late last year.
All right. Prediction time, I guess. We have our Pecota predictions, I guess, has the Rangers in second place, a few games behind the Angels. Do you concur? Do you have a win total and a place they're going to finish in mind?
I concur with that, and I will go with 89 wins. No, 88. 88. Clearly, I haven't thought about the actual win total. I've been thinking second. I think they finish in second. I think the A's third, the Mariners fourth, and the Astros fifth. And I think that most people that project going into the season are probably going to have something similar to that. But, you know, as we learned last year, you can't count the A's out, although I kind of am, which is the same mistake everyone made last year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, on paper, it's hard to match them up. But I mean, who knows? But I think Rangers second. I think they contend for the West, and I think they contend and possibly get a wild card berth, which is the Rangers fans, especially Braves fans, found out last year. It can be a tough playing in that wild card game. But I would say second place, a few games behind the Angels. But I would not be shocked if the Rangers won the division. I don't think it's likely, but you know. Just really any of the top three teams winning it, I wouldn't be totally shocked.
Well, if you change your mind on 88 and decide you want to go back to 89, just let us know. We'll run a correction in a later episode. We'll make sure everybody knows. All right, so we've got an interview up next with Richard Durick. You will hear a theme, and then you will hear Pete Barrett. So there you go. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
It may still be winter, but Baseball Prospectus is ready to play ball. Pete Barrett is taking you around the league with 30 insiders who cover Major League Baseball. Step into the box. The squeeze is on.
And welcome to The Squeeze. Richard Durick is a staff writer and blogger for ESPN Dallas. He joins us today from Surprise, Arizona to preview the Texas Rangers 2013 season. Richard, thanks for coming on.
Glad to do it.
A season before last, the Rangers went to back-to-back World Series. Last year, they didn't quite get there. Then this offseason, they lose Josh Hamilton and Mike Napoli. Before we get into specific players, additions in the offseason, prospects in the future, what is the tone around this team? I know it's very early, but in these voluntary workouts and now pitchers and catchers reporting.
You know, the tone is fine. I think there's a perception out there that this team had some major failure in the offseason, so everybody's kind of in some kind of depressive state. That's not the case here. They tried on some big fish. They weren't able to land them. It was not a great offseason for this team. There's no question about that. But it's still a very solid core group. It's still a contending team, at least on paper, headed into the season. And so I think there's just some questions they know they've got to answer this spring in regards to where some of these folks go and where the final spots are. And I think once they get those answered, they'll probably feel pretty confident heading into the season.
They did miss out on some big guys, but some veterans they brought in. Big Puma Lance Berkman returns to the state of Texas, agreeing to a one-year $11 million deal in January, and A.J. Pruszynski, before him, came aboard on another one-year deal. Do you like the moves to bring in a couple veterans in the short term?
I do, because I just don't think they had much of a choice. It was either that or spend more money and more years than they were comfortable. You know, there's Michael Bourne is still out there, but if you want Michael Bourne at this point, you can be looking at a long-term deal, and they just weren't willing to do that. They wanted Josh Hamilton back, but at 5 years and $125 million, I think that's above what they were comfortable doing. So what do you do? Well, you give yourself a chance to have a couple of bats at good value in Pruszynski and Berkman with the opportunity to move on and have financial flexibility after this year if those things don't pan out. So I do like the moves. Now, it's a risk with Berkman especially in that he was injured last year. He's got to stay healthy, but his knees feel good. He's expected to be coming into camp any day now, and they'll be very careful with how they treat him this spring to try to make sure those knees are okay. I don't think you'll see him play a lot of first base. I think it'll be a lot of DH in the spring and then a lot of DH to start the season, and they'll kind of work him maybe at first base when they need him, but only until that they feel like that knee is right where it needs to be.
How much do you think, because you brought up Josh Hamilton, do you think the way he finished the year and all the speculation of whether he quit on the team or what, how so be it, did that affect maybe the tone of the negotiations between the Rangers and Hamilton's people this offseason?
I don't think it impacted the tone, per se. I think they had a specific value they were looking at for Hamilton, and maybe how they valued him could have been slightly impacted by what happened in the final couple of weeks of the season. But they wanted him back. It wasn't as if they went to the offseason and said, see ya, don't want you back here. They talked to his agent all along. They were hoping and expecting to get a chance to match any offer. That didn't happen when the Angels swooped in. But they were interested enough that they weren't going to let the last couple of weeks and how things finished keep them from trying to sign a guy who, if you'll remember, despite those last couple of weeks, when he, by the way, was terrible. I mean, he really was.
Yeah.
Despite those weeks, 43 homers and 128 RBIs. You don't just replace that. I mean, that's very difficult to replace.
We're talking Rangers baseball with Richard Durick. You can follow him on Twitter at ESPN_Durick. Going into last spring, around baseball, you heard the names Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, other young guys. This year, a lot of buzz around some of the Rangers prospects, Jerks and Profar and Mike Olt. How far along are these guys, and when can we expect them to make an impact at the major league level?
They're pretty far along. They both got a taste of the big leagues last year in September. Plantar fasciitis kind of got Mike Olt, and he wasn't able to play very much. And then Jerks and Profar, the team was trying to push for a division title, and so they weren't playing him quite as much as maybe they normally would. But I think they're both very close. In with other teams and other circumstances, they might make the big league club. Could still make this big league club, but we'll just have to wait and see how all of that kind of pans out. But yeah, those are key cogs for the future of this team. Jerickson Profar is considered a top-notch middle infielder. He may get his hand at third base even a little bit, just, you know, some various things to try him at this spring. Mike Olt has been working out in the outfield. I think you could see him in that right field mix, especially if something happens to Nelson Cruz in regards to this Major League Baseball investigation about the story involving a link between him and a clinic that was selling PEDs. So I do think there's some flexibility there, some versatility from Profar and Olt that could make them even more valuable than they are right now.
I saw you tweet earlier today, Ron Washington is on the scene. What kind of camp does he run?
He runs a camp that really hones in on fundamentals, hones in on defense, hones in on doing all the little things. That's bunting with a certain count, and that's fielding your position. He really stresses that in spring training. They do a lot of situational stuff where they'll say, okay, the count's such and such, and you've got to execute. He'll force his guys, he'll talk to his guys about grounding, and then get out there and field grounders with him. It's really interesting to watch. He's such a good teacher. And spring training is really set up for that. So I think it's one of the things that he can really show his stripes at spring training to try to mold this team. And I think you'll see, once again, a renewed stress on the fundamentals as usual from him this spring.
One of the things I love about the Rangers, and I'm not alone, is their rotation. Yu Darvish, Derek Holland, Matt Harrison, Alexi Ogando, and as of now, maybe Martin Perez in the fifth spot. And without a doubt, they're good. But a couple of years ago, I remember Nolan Ryan's influence on starters. This is a big thing. They're going to be going deeper into games. They're going to have more durability. How does that affect what a pitcher is going to do in spring training?
I don't think it impacts it very much, to be honest. There's a plan in place that pitching coach Mike Maddox has, and I think maybe a little bit of that plan does have to do with the fact that they want their pitchers to kind of get – it's a mentality of give me one more out. Pitch me one more inning. Do a little bit more than you think you can do. That's the kind of thing that Ryan has tried to instill in the staff. And that's from the top on down. That's not just the guys at the major league level. It's the guys at the minor league level. And so you'll see some things here in this camp you might not see in other places. For example, pitchers and catchers report officially tomorrow. And they'll go through a little bit of a workout that's a bit casual, but things really get going the following day. You will see right away those first couple of days, pitchers will be pitching live batting practice. They'll have a sense of that hitter right when camp starts. And you don't normally see that from some folks, but it's a belief by Maddox and this staff that expose the pitchers to hitters as quickly as they can because they believe strongly that a hitter lets you know how good you are. And so you'll see that. And guys will have to get used to that. And that's part of that is, hey, you've got to be ready. They know that in the off season that the club does that. So I think it gets a lot of guys throwing maybe a little sooner than they would otherwise, make sure their arms are up to speed, and then they'll go through the whole throwing program here. So it probably impacts it a little bit. But to be honest, overall, I've always thought over the years that it's a little bit overrated to talk about all the pitch counts and who throwing out pitch counts. They still care about pitch counts. They just want their pitchers to have a mentality that they can go deeper, that there's no imaginary cutoff at 100 pitches, for instance, where you just can't do anything anymore. That's the mentality they're trying to move past.
This year, of course, the Astros moved to the AL West. Are you a fan of having a balanced Major League Baseball with five teams in each division?
I am. I know there's some folks that don't care for it, but I like it. I like the idea that there's now five teams in each division. And frankly, the Astros' decision makes sense because the Rangers, it was a natural rivalry for those two teams anyway, and now, finally, the Rangers have another team in their time zone. Now, this is a club that anytime you want to watch them play a road game in the AL West, you've got to go to California or Seattle. And now there's at least a little more variety there where Houston, and it was already a decent rivalry. I think it'll just build a little bit as the Astros get better. It's going to take them a while, but the teams will be playing more often. So I like it. I think it'll be good.
And if we look at the AL East just once more, AL West, excuse me. The Rangers may have dropped off a little talent this offseason. The Athletics may have overperformed above their ability last season. Where do you see things shaking out this year?
It's going to be interesting, isn't it? I think going in, you probably have to favor the Angels just a little bit. You know, they've bolstered things this offseason. I think the question with them is going to be health and depth. They don't have a ton of depth. I'm still concerned about the bullpen. I think it's still a bit weak. And as we saw last year, if that lineup doesn't click right away, it puts you behind. I still believe the Angels lost the AL West in April of 2012. They played better after that. Yeah, they had a bad August, but April killed them. 8 games back or something like that at the end of the first month. That's just so difficult to make up because the division's so good. The A's played very well last year. You're right. I mean, to do what they did in the final weeks, to come back from 6 games back with 9 to play, it's just 4 games back with 6 to play. It's asking a lot, and yet they were able to do it. Can they do that again? Well, it's a young team. You know, I can make the argument that a lot of these guys should just be progressing and getting better. I think the Rangers are right in that mix. I think they have the talent on their starting rotation to stay in games. It's still a very formidable lineup. Just because Josh Hamilton isn't in it doesn't mean the lineup has disappeared. It's a deep lineup from top to bottom. They were the leader in runs scored last year, and that wasn't just because of Josh Hamilton. And then the bullpen is a big question mark. Outside of Joe Nathan, there's a lot of spots to fill in there. And as those get filled in this spring, and in April and May, we see what those guys have, I think we'll have a better idea of what this division looks like. But to me, this could be pretty exciting because you've got 3 teams that I think are capable of winning the division, all sort of duking it out, and we'll see what happens.
Richard, thank you so much for joining us, and enjoy the rest of camp.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.